On the shore of the ocean of milk. Gutfa. After going. Jagannatham. Under the master of the entire universe. The supreme being. Devadevam. The supreme god of all gods. Vishakapim, the supreme person, Vishnu, and who provides for everyone and diminishes everyone's suffering. Purusham, the supreme person. Purusha Suktena. With the Vedic mantra known as Purusha Upa. Upatachte, worshipped. Samahitaha, with full attention. So translation, after reaching the shore of the ocean of milk, the demigods worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, the master of the whole universe, the supreme god of all gods, who provides for everyone and diminishes everyone's suffering. With great attention, they worship Lord Vishnu, who lies in the ocean of milk by reciting the Vedic mantras known as the Purusha Sutta. So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So, the demigods such as Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, King Indra, Chandra, and Surya are all subordinate to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Aside from the demigods, even in human society, there are many influential personalities supervising various businesses or establishments. Lord Vishnu, however, is the god of gods, Parameshvara. He is Parama Purusha, the supreme being, Paramatma, as confirmed in the Brahma Samhita in the 5th chapter, text 1. Ishvara Paramha Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha. Krishna, known as Govinda, is the supreme controller. He has an eternal, blissful, spiritual body. No one is equal to or greater than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore, he is described here by many words, Jagannatha, Devadeva, Vishakapali, and Purusha. The supremacy of Lord Vishnu is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita in the 10th chapter, text 12. In this statement by Arjuna, Param Brahma Param Dham Pavitram Paramam Bhavam Purusham Sashvatam Divyam Ari Devam Ajam Vibhu. You are the Supreme Brahman, the ultimate, the supreme abode and purifier, the absolute truth, and the eternal divine person. You are the primal God, transcendental and original, and you are the unborn and all-pervading beauty. Krishna is Hari Purusha, the original personality of Godhead, Govindam, Hari Purusha, Amaham, Jami. Vishnu is a plenary expansion of Lord Krishna, and all the Vishnu tattvas are Parameshvara, Deva, Deva. So, Vatra Gatva Jagannatham Deva Devam Vishakapim Purusham Purusha Suktena Upathaste Savagitaha. So, Om Ganat Chimadandasya Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshuram Minitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, this is a very interesting part of Srimad Bhagavatam. As we were mentioning yesterday, whenever the demigods or whenever the living entities have trouble, they approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in this particular case, you have Brahma with the different other demigods coming. And the reason that Brahma is going to Lord Vishnu is a very interesting psychological reason explained by the Acharyas, is that Lord Brahma is thinking, I'm in charge, because Lord Brahma is in charge of the mode of passion, I'm in charge of creation. And we have Lord Shiva here, who is in charge of the destruction. And so Lord Vishnu, your job, actually they're explaining to Lord Vishnu his job. You know, just like in every business, you have a job description, right? If you work for a particular business, this is your job description. At least that's how it's supposed to be in the modern world. So, Lord Vishnu, your job is maintenance. And maintenance means, you know, basically, Pritranaya Sadhanam Vinashaya Chatushkritam. Your business is to get rid of all the rascals. And your business is to establish religious principles and protect the devotees. So this is Lord Brahma's psychology in this particular instance. That this is your job, Lord Vishnu, not mine. And not Lord Shiva's job. So, and then also, the demigods, they're approaching Lord Vishnu. This interesting word used here is Vishakali. They're approaching Lord Vishnu with some material motive. And devotees like this word, Vishakali, because that indicates that Krishna will get rid of all my suffering, and then Krishna will provide whatever I want. He'll give me what I want. So this is, basically some sort of material motive that they're approaching the Supreme Personality of God. Anyway, another point Prabhupada makes here in the purport is, why do we accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead? You know, why do we accept Krishna as the original source of all the other incarnations? Why aren't the other demigods God? Just like sometimes you go into a temple and you'll hear people say, the gods. You want to see the gods today? And you got a whole bunch of the gods on the altar. In some temples you have like 5, 6, 7, 8 gods on the altar. And so, the reason we accept Krishna as God, there's several different reasons. One reason is, as Prabhupada quotes from this verse, the 10th chapter, 12th verse of the Gita, you know, Param Brahma, but then the next verse, 10:13, is very interesting. It states why Arjuna accepts Krishna as God. Not just because Krishna says he's God, because there's a lot of rascals who say that they're God, or do some mystical tricks, as we mentioned in some previous class. But who's plum? Rishiyat sarve devarshi naradas tata. I accept you as God, Arjuna is saying, because all the sages have accepted you. That is, Rishiyat sarve, that means all the sages. Rishis, sarva, all of them. Devala, that means the sage Devala, Vyasa, Narada, all these have accepted Krishna. So, therefore we should accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of God. And these great sages, they've written, this is our method of understanding God. The other day we were talking about this fancy word, epistemology. I mentioned that several times. Epistemology basically means, how do you know what you know? And because we have imperfect senses, a tendency to cheat, a tendency to be an illusion, therefore, we should be very careful about thinking we know something. You understand? Very careful about thinking we know, because seeing is not necessarily believing. There are mirages. Sometimes you can see water on the road when it doesn't exist. And sometimes you can see something. It was like this morning I was walking and I thought I saw a person standing on the road because it was dark. But it wasn't a person. It was a dog. So that's in perfect senses. So because of that, what we know maybe is not true. And what we don't know maybe is true. So our method of understanding knowledge is the descending process that is mentioned here. What the great sages have said, what the Vedic literatures say, and on that basis we can prove that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We can prove A.K. Chung said Palak Pumsa. Krishna is true Bhagavan Swayam. We can prove that Krishna is the source of all the incarnations. It's pretty easy. Just like Prabhupada said, that if a lawyer goes to court, he has to be able to quote from the law. Right? Like if he's defending someone, he has to be able to say, in this law, in this book, written 5,000 years ago, not 5,000 years ago, obviously, written, you know, 1962, it says that this is legal or illegal. He can't say to the judge, I don't think this person is guilty. He's a nice guy. And the judge will say, why do you think he's a nice guy? Because I love him. I mean, what's the use of such a stupid argument like that in court? So if you're going to court, you have to be able to quote the law. So a devotee, if they're going to present Krishna consciousness, it's important to be able to quote Shastra. And people say, you know, I believe Krishna is God, I believe Durga is God, I believe Satya Sai Baba is God, I believe, Shirdi Sai Baba is God, I believe Bhagavan Rajneesh is God. I don't know if you know about him. He was a person from the 1960s from India. And he declared he was God, and he asked all of his disciples to buy him enough Rolls Royce. You know what a Rolls Royce is? No. Rolls Royce is the most expensive car you can get. They don't even have them here in Fiji. I don't even think I've seen one. Maybe some ambassador has one or something. So he wanted a Rolls Royce for every day of the year. 365 and 366 on leap year. Pretty good, isn't it? And each of these cars is like at least $400,000 Fijian dollars. Pretty good, isn't it? Wouldn't that be nice to have that many cars? Anyways, actually, my father had a Rolls Royce. And I asked my father, you know, how many kilometers do you get per liter? And he said, if you have to ask that question, you don't belong in this car. You understand? Because you don't care about money if you're spending so much. So this bogus God, he even gave him his name, Bhagavan. Bhagavan. Anyway, won't mention his name. And then he had illicit relationships with his, I mean, there's so many crazy things. So people are so stupid they accept any damn person as God without the scriptural reference. So we have to be able to prove by scriptural reference, not only the name of the person, but where they were born, what they, like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for example, we have in the Vedic literatures what his mother's name would be, his father's name would be, where he would appear before he came. All this information was there in the Vedic literatures. So therefore we accept him as God. And the sages accept him as God. And there's certain characteristics one must have. Anyway, so that's what we call epistemology. How do you know what you know? Okay. And that's the first point here. Another point, very interesting thing here in this verse, is that we often hear about this prayer, Purusha Shukta. You've heard about the prayer, Purusha Shukta? No? No? Oh my God. Where have you been all these years? So this is the prayer that the demigods use to glorify the Supreme Personality of God. And this prayer, mentioned here in the verse, if you heard the verse today, you would have heard it. The verse, of course, says, Purusham Purusha Suktena. That's Purusha Suktena. That means a very nice verse to the Purusha. So this Purusha Sukta is recited whenever they're installing deities, whenever they're doing fancy fire sacrifices. If you were Brahmin, you'd know about this. So, and it comes from the Rig Veda. The Rig Veda is one of the four original Vedas. You know, the Rig, Sama, Yajur, Atharva Veda. Rig Veda is the Vedic literature of hymns. Hymns means like chant. Okay? Hymns, songs. Sama Veda is the Veda that deals with music. Sama, like the Sama Veda. Yajur Veda is the Veda that deals with swaha, you know, sacrifices. And the Atharva Veda deals with different mantras, let's say sometimes cursing, weapons. Like if you want to learn the different astras, you know, like Brahmastra, Indrastra, Shivastra, you know what that means? The weapons. Then you go to the Atharva Veda. Of course, it won't do you any good, because you have to be initiated in those weapons by a spiritual master, like Dronacharya or something like that, or Parashuram. This is the method. Otherwise, you can chant the mantras all you want, but they're not going to help you. Just like we have our Gayatri mantra, or mantras, in our Krishna conscious movement, you can read about them, they're available on the internet, but they won't help you unless you're initiated. What is that? Sampranaya vinaya mantras te nishpala. Mataha. Mantras must be received in disciplined succession. Then they have potency. So anyway, so these are the four what we call original Vedas. When someone talks about Vedic, something being Vedic, sometimes that's what they mean. The four original Vedas and the Upanishads. Does anyone know what the word Upanishad means? What? The name, Upanishad. The word. Lifting up also means come closer. It means to approach Tadviti Pranibratena Pariprashnena Sevaya. Right? To approach the spiritual master and inquire submissively. So the Upanishads are discussions between gurus and disciples. And it's interesting in the Upanishads, you ladies will like this. One of the primary gurus in the Upanishads, her name is Gargi. You understand? It's like you have Garga Muni, who's a man, obviously. And then you have Gargi, who's a lady. So she's a guru. So you ladies can become gurus. How about that? No sannyasis. Can't become sannyasis. But you can become gurus. There's so many gurus. So Gargi. Anyway, that's the Upanishads. And then after that, the Vedic literature is containing what? Vedanta Sutra. Vedanta Sutra. Anyone's heard about the Vedanta Sutra before? No. Rama Sutra, Vedanta Sutra. They're actually a commentary on the Upanishads. Written very short statements. And so the Vedanta Sutras pertain, each and every verse pertains to certain Upanishads. And we quote from the Upanishads sometimes. What Upanishad do we quote from? Anyone know? What? Isha Upanishad, Kali Santara Upanishad too, right. Isha Upanishad, some different Upanishads like that. So we quote from the Upanishad. So then you got the Upanishad literature. These are considered the original Vedic literatures. Then after that you have the Itihasa, the histories like Ramayana and Mahabharata, Puranas like the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 18 major Puranas, and you have the Smritis, that means the literatures that help you perform, you have the Tantras, those literatures that connect you, like the Narada Pancharatra and others like that. Anyway, so getting back to the Purusha Sukta, because I think it's an interesting topic. This Purusha Sukta is from the Rig Veda, as I mentioned before. And I actually noted down some of the verses from the Purusha Sukta, because this is what the demigods are reciting here. So it's important to understand what the Purusha Sukta is. Of course, the most well-known verse of the Purusha Sukta is verse 1, which is, and I'll recite it for you, so you can hear it. So, Om Sahasra Shirsha Purusha Sahasraksha Sahasrapat Sabhumim Vishuto Vitva Atyottishta Dashangulam. Anyway, I can go through the whole Purusha Sukta. And in our Mayapur, when we were installing the chakras there, some of you know about the big chakras, there was one chakra that was as tall as the reach to the ceiling. That's how big it was. You understand? Can you imagine a chakra? It's the biggest chakra in the world. And they lifted it up and put it on the temple. We have a whole video of that. But in any case, as they were installing it, the Purusha Sukta hymns were being chanted. And there was Abhishek. We did Abhishek for the chakra. Pretty good. So we didn't climb the chakra. But there was a platform high, and everybody was doing Abhishek for the chakra. So anyway, so here's the Purusha Sukta, the translation of it, which is really interesting. There's also a chapter in the second chapter of the there's a chapter in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam called the Purusha Sukta Confirmed. Anyone's heard of that chapter before? Anyway, second. So that means it confirms it has the same topic as the Purusha Sukta. So the Purusha Sukta is a prayer to approach God as the Supreme Lord in the form of the Garbha Dakshai Vishnu. Let me explain that. That's important to understand. It's not a prayer to Krishna in Vrindavan. Garbha Dakshai Vishnu is the second expansion from the Mahavishnu, or the Karana Dakshai Vishnu. So, Karana Dakshai Vishnu is a portion of a plenary portion of Krishna. In other words, he's Krishna, but he's not exhibiting all the different qualities that Krishna exhibits. He's an expansion of Krishna. Just like there's so many different avatars, so many different expansions. Of course, we're most familiar with the Dasha avatars, like Korma, Matsya, Varaha, Ram, Nrsimha. These are the Dasha avatars. Balaram, Krishna, of course. But the avatar, or the expansion that deals with the material world, is called the Mahavishnu. And Mahavishnu, he breathes out, all the universes come out, and he breathes in, and all the universes come in. That's the time of the dissolution. And so then Mahavishnu expands as the Garbha Dakshai Vishnu. Garbha means like the womb, like the lady has a womb. So it's the womb of the universe. And from the Garbha Dakshai Vishnu, everything is created in this universe. So he's like the essential Lord who actually manifests the whole universe. He actually manifests first Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma comes from the navel. He has a lotus flower. Oops. He has a lotus flower that comes from his navel. This not Lord Brahma, but Garbha Dakshai Vishnu. And then Garbha Dakshai Vishnu also expands as Shiro Dakshai Vishnu. And the Shiro Dakshai Vishnu is the one who's on the shore of the ocean of milk that the demigods are praying to. And the Mahavishnu is the one who basically manifests everything. Okay. So here's the prayer. This is actually very interesting. This prayer. Actually, it starts with an invocation. We worship and pray to the Supreme Lord for the welfare of all beings. May all the miseries and shortcomings leave us forever, so that we may always sing for the Lord during the holy fire ceremonies. May all medicinal herbs grow in potency, that all diseases may be cured. May the gods rain peace on us, May all two-legged creatures be happy, and may all the four-legged creatures be happy. Well, so it ends, obviously. It ends with this first invocation is with the words, Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. That's where actually everybody knows that. Anybody who comes from Hindu culture, Indian culture, knows the words, Om Shanti, 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 right? It's peace, in case you haven't figured that out. So, that comes from the Purusha Sukta. It's interesting, isn't it? It comes from the Rig Veda, this Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. And now, the universal form of the Lord is described in the Purusha Sukta. So the universal form means how the Lord, in one sense, is everything. So I'll read this verse. The Purusha, that means the Supreme Being, has 1,000 heads, 1,000 eyes, and 1,000 feet. He has enveloped this world, that means he's taken this world within himself, from all sides, and has transcended it by 10 angulas, or 10 angles like this. So a lot of this is very difficult to understand. 10 angles, what does that mean? That basically means, aham sarvasya prabhava matat sarva pravartite, right? Everybody knows that verse? Nobody knows that verse. Iti matvavahatma. So everything comes from me. From me the entire creation flows. And those who are wise worship me with all their hearts. So that's Bhagavad Gita, of course. So this is basically the same thing. Krishna, in one sense, is everything, and he's different from everything simultaneously. What's that called? Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. So, actually, this universal form is not so lovable. Actually, Prabhupada, this is an interesting story. Prabhupada was sitting in Calcutta, and Calcutta was being bombed. In other words, there were bombs dropping in Calcutta. It's World War II. And Prabhupada said, this is the universal form of Krishna. As Krishna says in the Gita, what is it? Kalo Asmi. Also, Mrityu Sarva Haras Jaham. So, that's Krishna. So a devotee sees that everything, in one sense, is Krishna. Anyway, that's the first verse. And the second verse is, all this is verily the Purusha. In other words, everything is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All which existed in the past or will come into being in the future is also the Purusha. Also, he is the Lord of immortality. That which grows profusely by food is also the Purusha. In other words, we're beginning to understand, in this Purusha Sukta, that everything is Krishna. And, of course, this is similar to the one of the nutshell verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. That before the creation there was I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. During the creation there was I, and after the creation there was I. In other words, nothing exists besides Krishna and his energies. It's interesting, at least for me. Maybe not for you. Maybe it's too philosophical for you. So the next one is, so much is his greatness. However, the Purusha is greater than this. All beings form only a quarter part of him. The three-quarter part of his, which is eternal, is established in the spiritual kingdom. So that's another important point. That you have the whole kingdom of God, but in one corner, which is called the what? The dark corner. But what is that corner called? No, not just dark. Mahatattva. In one corner of the Lord's creation, there's a dark area. And that's where we are. So therefore, in this area where we are, we need what? Sunlight, moonlight, or electricity. What's it described? Anyone know the verse in the Gita where it says in the spiritual world there's no need of sunlight, moonlight, or electricity? No one knows the verse. Natadvasvite suryo nasa shanko napavakaha
Yadgatva Nirvartante Tam Dana Arman Ama. In the spiritual world, everything is effulgent. So there's no need of any light. Here, everything is dark, so without the sun, without the electricity, everything is completely dark. But in the spiritual world, everything is just glowing. It's amazing. Just like one time, someone saw Prabhupada from the other side of the street, and he said, that man is glowing. So the spiritual world is like that. It glows. So it's never, you don't need flashlights. No torches are there. Anyway, so three quarters of the Lord's creation is the spiritual world, and we're in the one quarter. We're in the garbage. Just like everybody has a nice house, and outside the house they put the garbage outside that the dogs eat. So, or another example that Prabhupada gave is that you have society, but then you also have a prison house. So we're living in the prison house. One name for the prison house is Durga, to move with great difficulty. So we're in this one quarter where they throw all the rebellious criminals. And so we're a rebellious criminal. So anyway, I'm just reading a few of the verses. From him, the Adi Purusha, original person, was born the Virat. That means the universal form. Making this Virat as the substratum of being, Brahma was born. In other words, that Virat performed is like the foundation of all the universes. And Brahma was born. As soon as he was born, he multiplied himself. Later he created this earth, and then the body is the living entities. In other words, the whole creation of the material world is being described, very similar to the Srimad Bhagavatam. That Brahma came, and Brahma is the original Prajapati. Prajapati means the person who has a lot of children. And so, like if someone has a lot of children, I call them a Prajapati. So from Lord Brahma, he created all the living entities, you know, the animals, the plants, the human beings, the demigods and everything like that, and created the earth and the bodies of everybody on the earth. The next verse is when the devas or the demigods performed a yajna for a sacrificial ritual, using the Purusha as the sacrificial material for the yajna, the spring became the ghee. This is very sophisticated language. And the summer served as pieces of wood, and the Sharad autumn filled the place of the havis. The havis means the ghee, and also means like the rice cake. So this is all a very sophisticated language. I don't have time to explain it all, but it basically means that everything we see is meant for sacrifice. Basically, that's the meaning of this particular verse. And of course, that's also in the Bhagavad Gita. In the beginning of creation, the Lord sent forth ingredients of the sacrifice, saying, be thou happy with this yajna. That's Bhagavad Gita verse. So everything is meant to be sacrificed for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, meant to be an ingredient of sacrifice for the Lord. Anyway, there's many more verses of this Purusha Shukta, which we don't have time to read. But it's a very beautiful prayer. And the devotees who attend the Gurukula, they learn this prayer for sacrifices. And so, I'm not saying that you should all learn it, but it's a very beautiful prayer that comes from the Rig Veda. And that prayer is being recited by the demigods to glorify Lord Vishnu, the Shirodakshaya Vishnu, so that Shirodakshaya Vishnu will incarnate or help them in their mission and save the universe. Okay? So, any questions or comments? We got 2 more minutes. Questions, comments? It's a little technical stuff today, but it's important for the devotees to understand what the Purusha Sukta is. because it's a very important Vedic prayer. So if anyone asks you, you say that. And that's where Om Shanti 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 comes from. Questions? Sumukha. Sacrifice, yeah.
If you really think like animal sacrifice, there is to just go to that sacrifice.
Yeah.
In Bhagavad Gita, it is just sacrifice.
But that's no, it also means yat kurosi yasna si yasna hosh nadasiya. Yat the pasha si kondiya tat kurushwa aparna. You know that verse? Sacrifice doesn't mean simply offer a leaf fruit of water. It means whatever you do, whatever you offer, whatever you give away should be done as an offering to me. That's really what sacrifice means. Now, traditionally, in the other ages, there was animal sacrifice. There was Ashwamedha, Gomedha. They would sacrifice a horse, or they'd sacrifice a cow, and the cow or the horse would get a new body. The proof of that was that the cow or the horse would come out of the sacrifice, usually as a human being. In other words, the animal would go in, and out of the sacrifice would come a human being. And the sacrifices were so potent that there's many instances where people wanted a son or a daughter, and they got a child from the sacrifice. What's an example of that? Draupadi. Drupada, her father, he didn't want a daughter. He just wanted a son. Anyway. And he got two for the price of one. And the interesting thing is, I'll tell you a funny thing about that sacrifice, is that Drupada hired these brahmanas, Yagya or something like that. Anyway, whatever their names were. So he hired them to do the sacrifice, and they were supposed to give something to Drupada's wife so she could have a kid. So what happened is that they said, now is the time, Drupada, for your wife to come. But Drupada's wife was putting all of her jewelry on, so she didn't come on time. And the Yagya Nupa Yagya, that means sacrifice and little sacrifice. They got angry and they said, no, we're going to have the kid without her. So actually she was meant to do it. Just like in the story of Lord Ram, you have Rishi Sringa performing the sacrifice. You know the story? And he got the kheer, and the ladies drank the kheer, and the children were born as a result. That's the general way to do it. But if the lady doesn't show up on time, the brahmanas were so powerful they could have the kids without the lady. And that's what happened in Drupada's case, with Dhrishtadyumna and Draupadi. So those are powerful brahmanas. They can recite these mantras, they have potency, and even kids can come out of the sacrifice. So, any other questions? If not, actually it's time to greet the deities right now. Thank you very much. And anyway, all glories to divine grace. Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Well, I got a lot of people watching.